It's the Noon Report from Family Life, bringing a Christian worldview to what's happening in New York, Pennsylvania, across the country, and around the world. Weather with Kevin Williams, plus special features and reports with the Family Life News Team. Now, here's what's happening.
Are we headed for a recession? Good afternoon. Welcome to the broadcast. With gas prices through the roof and inflation at a 40-year high, the dreaded R word is back. Former Treasury Secretary Larry Summers thinks a recession is likely, and soon.
We haven't had a situation like the present with inflation above 4 and unemployment below 4 without a recession.
But others within the Biden administration think a recession is not a foregone conclusion.
I don't think a recession is at all inevitable.
A recession is not inevitable.
The Federal Reserve last week raised interest rates to try and tap the brakes on inflation, but many think that action in and of itself will cause a recession. Brian Deese heads the president's National Economic Council.
The single most impactful thing that we could do right now is to work with Congress to pass legislation that would lower the costs of things that families are facing right now.
With gas hovering at $5 a gallon, the White House is flirting with a national gas tax holiday. Makes sense to Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen.
President Biden wants to do anything he possibly can to help consumers. Gas prices have risen a great deal.
According to Energy Secretary Jennifer Granholm, you and I are in for a tough summer when it comes to gas prices.
Driving season just started, and we know that there will be continued upward pull on demand.
A national gas tax holiday would save motorists about 18 cents a gallon. New York already suspended its gas tax through the end of the year. Turmoil in the terminals. Thousands of flights canceled over the Juneteenth and Father's Day holiday weekend. This dad trying to take it all in stride.
Look at the line. I mean, welcome to 2022, I guess.
More than 3,000 flights were grounded Sunday, and that stranded passengers like this woman at New York's JFK Airport.
My sister's getting married, and the reception was tomorrow, but we're not going to make it.
Air traffic on Friday was just shy of a new pandemic record, and that has aggravated an already strained aviation system.
To get here to the airport, just for our flight to be delayed, and about 11:30 last night, the flight was canceled.
The chaos comes as airlines contend with bad weather, staffing shortages, and astronomical fuel costs. The Biden administration is drafting plans to bus migrants into American towns far away from the southern border. This as Homeland Security tries to relieve the pressure that the immigration crisis has caused on border communities. Former ICE Director Jonathan Fahey.
You really have to marvel at the commitment this administration has to this open borders policy. You know, it seems like our Department of Homeland Security just wants to operate as basically a concierge service for illegal immigrants.
Fahey thinks the Biden border doctrine has invited the current immigration crisis. A victory for women's sports, the world governing body for swimming, has just voted to restrict the participation of transgender athletes in elite competitions. Correspondent Janice Mackey Fryer.
The vote came about after months of consultations. It takes effect today, and it effectively means that most transgender athletes won't be able to compete in women's aquatics events if they have experienced male puberty.
The new policy requires transgender swimmers to have completed their transition by 12 years of age in order to compete against female athletes. Two captured American volunteers who were fighting for Ukraine are being held by Russian-backed separatists in war-torn Eastern Europe. The men from Alabama were captured in the so-called Donetsk People's Republic. They had traveled to Ukraine in early June. The head of the World Health Organization believes that COVID-19 could have very well been leaked from a lab. Fox News medical correspondent Marty McCary says this is nothing new in communist China.
Lab leaks happen all the time. They've actually happened in China before the COVID lab leak. It happened in 1977 when China was found to be injecting their military recruits with some experimental vaccine at the same year that a virus leaked from one of their labs. And in 2004, we know the SARS virus leaked after SARS had gone away.
Last year, President Biden ordered U.S. intelligence to look into the origins of COVID. That report came back inconclusive. New poll out shows most Americans believe former President Trump should face charges for the January 6th Capitol attack. 58% of respondents to the ABC News Ipsos survey say Mr. Trump should be held to account. 91% of Democrats support criminal charges, just 19% of Republicans do. Illinois Republican Adam Kinzinger.
And I think this blows actually Watergate out of the water.
The ABC News Ipsos poll finds 60% of Americans believe the House panel looking into January 6th is conducting a fair and impartial hearing, the next public hearing set for tomorrow. The first federal holiday commemorating the end of slavery is being observed today. All banks, schools, post offices, federal and state government buildings, as well as the stock markets are closed today. Juneteenth is the 12th federal holiday on the calendar. 27-year-old Englishman Matt Fitzpatrick is celebrating his first major golf title, the U.S. Open, in Brookline, Massachusetts.
The feeling's out of this world. It's so cliche, but it's stuff you dream of as a kid. And to achieve it, I can retire a happy man tomorrow.
Fitzpatrick won the U.S. Amateur on the same course nearly a decade ago. Jack Nicklaus, the only other player to have accomplished that. Still to come on the Noon Report for a Monday. New York gearing up for primary day next week. Pennsylvania tackles school security issues. And a Buffalo area barbershop marking a major milestone.
Hi, I'm meteorologist Josh Nichols here in the Weather Center, tracking some warmer weather for the start of the new summer season. We'll let you know how warm it gets and when a thunder threat may develop in my full forecast in just 10 minutes.
All right, Josh, looking forward to it. Thank you. Checking the stories making news across New York and Pennsylvania with local families struggling with high inflation and high gas prices. One Cambria County, Pennsylvania store is giving back. Smith Meyer's Superette in Loretto Borough has lowered their gas prices by 60 cents a gallon, and they challenged other stations to do the same. The store's owner decided to cut his prices to $4.49 a gallon as a way to help out people and give back to the local community. Primary day is a week from tomorrow in New York, and the gubernatorial candidates are crisscrossing the Empire State, making the case to voters in the closing days of the campaign.
When people talk about having strength and grit and tenacity, you know where it all came from? Growing up down the road.
New York Governor Kathy Hochul at a rally over the weekend in her hometown of Buffalo. She's expected to coast to victory in the Democratic primary June 28th. In the Republican race, Andrew Giuliani is hoping to pull off the upset over the GOP frontrunner, Lee Zeldin.
I'm a strong conservative. I'm going to make sure every single day I fight for our Constitution, I fight for conservative values, and I fight to take back New York.
No Republican has won the governor's race in New York since George Pataki more than 20 years ago. Early voting for the gubernatorial primary started this past weekend. Pennsylvania has a new Democratic Party chairman, but he is not the guy endorsed by either Josh Shapiro or Tom Wolf. The current governor and the guy who wants to be the next governor did not support the nomination of State Senator Sharif Street of Philadelphia. Street over the weekend became the first black person ever elected to lead the Democratic Party in Pennsylvania. Some Pennsylvania parents have mixed feelings about giving their children under the age of six the COVID vaccine. That shot becomes available starting tomorrow. Jessica Vogelsong of East Pennsboro has three children in that age range, and she plans to give them all the shot.
We are big believers of vaccines, and this one was no different.
But Dean Fletcher of Harrisburg tells Newswatch 16 he is still on the fence about whether to get his twin daughters inoculated.
They haven't been out long enough like the other vaccines they get, to really know a long-term effect on kids this young.
Infectious disease experts predict only about 20 to 25% of parents with children under 6 will get their kids the COVID shot. New York City Mayor Eric Adams is giving unvaccinated workers another shot at getting their jobs back if they're willing to get the COVID jab by the end of the month.
He's extorting us. That's all it really is. It's extortion. He's holding a carrot over our head saying, if you want your career, get vaccinated or else.
Sean Kilcullen is an unvaccinated New York City sanitation worker.
They know they can't fire us for not being vaccinated, and that's what's happening right now. They're going to have lawsuits all over the place. He's holding our careers against us for no reason. No other city does this. New York State doesn't do this. Why are we doing this? For what reason? We pick up garbage. We don't see anybody. We don't come in contact with anybody. There's no reason we should be vaccinated.
Over 1,000 city workers have been fired for refusing the COVID jab. 6,000 have filed for a religious exemption. A Pennsylvania politician is calling for uniform school building safety standards in the wake of the most recent school shooting in Uvalde, Texas.
At the end of the day, you may be separated by a county line, your school district, but one school can be a lot safer than others.
State Senator Mike Regan wants every school in PA to have baseline security requirements, including hardened entrances with armed school resource officers.
The idea would be that the gunfight takes place in the doorway, not inside, because you have armed good guys who will confront anyone who is a problem before they get in the building.
Regan also wants every school district in Pennsylvania to be required to conduct at least one active shooter drill every year. As part of Juneteenth celebrations, the new John Jones Museum and Gravesite is open to the public in Elmira, New York. Jones escaped slavery, walking almost 300 miles to Elmira, where he was a major player in the Underground Railroad prior to the end of the Civil War.
With the help of local abolitionists, he was able to get the resources to help over 800 people reach freedom.
Museum spokeswoman Talima Aaron says John Jones helped bury 3,000 Confederate soldiers and kept meticulous records so their families could identify them.
He did not harbor hate or ill feelings. He gave them the dignity and depth that he could not get in life. He knew that they were fighting to keep people like him enslaved, but he gave them the type of burial that illustrated his humanity.
The John Jones Museum is open Friday, Saturdays, and Sundays from 1 to 4 p.m. there in Elmira, New York. A local barber shop is celebrating 50 years of business. The Handsome Devil Barber Room in Depew, New York, faced struggles during the pandemic, but it's been able to keep its doors open. Owner Michael Zangi tells WGRZ.
It makes me feel, really proud. It's a family business. We've been in business for 50 years. It's nice, especially after COVID, to make sure that the small businesses still stick around.
Zangi comes from a long line of barbers. His father started the Depew Barber Shop way back in 1972. It's 14 past the hour. You're listening to the Noon Report on Family Life. All right, let's check sports next. The Tampa Bay Lightning looking to strike back in the Stanley Cup Finals. The two-time defending champs host the Colorado Avalanche. Game 3 tonight in Tampa. Colorado up 2-0 with 2 convincing victories thus far. Let's talk baseball next. The Yankees bit by the long ball in a 10-9 loss to the Blue Jays in Toronto yesterday. New York pitchers allowing 4 home runs to fall short of sweeping the 3-game series. The Bronx Bombers still have the best record in the bigs. Gerard Encarnacion hit a grand slam as the Marlins pick up the 6-2 win over the Mets in Flushing. Chris Bassitt allowing 3 runs over 6 1/3 to take the loss for New York. Juan Soto hit his 14th home run of the season as the Nats hammer the Phillies 9-3 in D.C. Jack Zawinski making history as the Pirates walk off the Giants 4-3 in Pittsburgh. He becomes the first rookie in Major League history to have a 3 home run game, including that walk-off. The Red Sox have won their 5th series in a row after taking the rubber match against the Cardinals. Boston bashed its way to a 6-4 victory over St. Louis at Fenway. The Cleveland Guardians scored 2 runs in the top of the 9th, a 5-3 win over the Dodgers at Dodger Dodger Stadium. The Braves held the Cubs to 6 hits, a 6-0 win at Wrigley, and Mike Trout homered for the 5th time in 5 games as the Angels defeat the Mariners 4-0 in Seattle. Finally, golf. Matt Fitzpatrick celebrating his first major tournament victory. Fitzpatrick finished atop the leaderboard with a 6 under par to win the U.S. Open by 1 stroke at the Country Club in Brookline, Massachusetts. The Englishman shot a 68 in the final round to preserve the victory. At the Family Life Sports Desk, I'm Bob Price. Much more ahead on the Noon Report for a Monday, including this. Summer's sizzle settling in. Josh Nichols in 4 minutes. Another violent weekend on America's city streets and a brand new feature on Family Life. It's called Faith Foundations, and we'll debut it for you after this.
If you have suspected that the emperor has no clothes, I've got good news and bad news. The good news, you're not crazy. Bad news, he's really naked. For the Colson Center, I'm John Stone Street. This is Breakpoint. Matt Walsh's new documentary, What is a Woman?, is built on a very simple premise. Ask the academics, the pediatricians, the politicians who promote transgender ideology to define their terms. The result is a documentary that's engaging, depressing, and infuriating all at the same time. In the end, Walsh demonstrates just how bankrupt transgender ideology is, how damaging it is, and how even its most vocal supporters cannot prove otherwise. Now, that should reassure the millions of people who've had this sense that even though companies like Google, Starbucks, and Pizza Hut, and so many politicians and others talk as if this whole issue is settled, it's not. In fact, according to a recent poll commissioned by Summit Ministries, there's still a significant majority of Americans who oppose gender-altering surgery for minors, as well as classroom indoctrination. Even so, as much as the emperor is being paraded in front of our faces all the time, it's easy to get twisted up. You might be tempted to wonder, does everyone really buy this? Or even maybe it's me that's missing something. Look, the real contribution of Matt Walsh's documentary is to remind us that there really are no clothes on this particular emperor. When Walsh asked an exasperated professor of gender studies at the University of Tennessee to define a woman, the reply is, a person who identifies as a woman, to which Walsh responds, but what are they identifying as? The resulting silence is painful enough as both viewers and presumably even the professor realize that his definition is circular. The documentary then cuts to one of the country's leading transgender surgeons and then later a trans-affirming pediatrician. When Walsh asked the pediatrician just how young children should be before beginning trans hormone therapy, she answers with a smile, as soon as they asked for it. Yet no one can smile when a victim of these bad ideas is then introduced. Scott Nugent, once known as Kelly King, is a biological female who underwent so-called gender-affirming surgery. And she now spends her life warning others of the unrelenting medical and psychological complications and damage that it has caused. And then, George Orwell famously said that the first duty of any intelligent purpose is to restate the obvious. These days, however, most people realize just how much that kind of clarity can cost. The final strength of Walsh's documentary, if you ask me, is simply to remind millions of us that we're not crazy. Or as Scott Nugent put it, we're butchering a generation of children because nobody's willing to talk about anything. Transgender ideology is a set of lies, and it's claiming millions of victims. People who identify as transgender are broken and hurting victims of these bad ideas. People who are imposing these bad ideas on others, especially children, may be sincere, but they're making victims of others. Now, whenever Christians respond to bad ideas and their victims, the truth we tell cannot be separated from love. This documentary, What is a Woman?, will be seen by many as less than compassionate. It will be slandered by others as downright hateful. Still, even if our culture cannot distinguish between disagreement and disdain, compassion is not the opposite of confrontation. Jesus was pretty clear when he said that if anyone causes any of these little ones to stumble, it'd be better for them to have a large millstone hung around their neck and be drowned in the depths of the sea. Look, even if advocates of transgender ideology, even the most aggressive ones, do not always understand what they're doing, what they are doing is pushing people, especially children, to a destructive end. Christians cannot tolerate any kind of viewpoint that is so damaging, especially so damaging to young children. So this is a moment that for us requires courage. And be assured, in this case, that emperor is really naked. For the Colson Center, I'm John Stone Street with Breakpoint.
20 past the hour. Let's take it outside, Josh Nichols.
Good afternoon. Here is the Family Life Weather Report. For this afternoon, we'll see high clouds and sun mixed. The high 70 to 75 over New York, 75 to 80 over central and eastern Pennsylvania. Tonight, a widely scattered shower or thunderstorm over western New York and western Pennsylvania. Otherwise, it's partly starlit. The low temperature in the low 50s eastern Pennsylvania, low 60s central and western Pennsylvania. Ample sunshine for tomorrow. The high 75 to 80 over New York State, low 80s western and central Pennsylvania. For Family Life, I'm meteorologist Josh Nichols.
Thank you, Josh. This is the Noon Report. I'm your host, Bob Price, and a lot going on this Monday, the 20th of June. Summer officially arrives tomorrow, but it's definitely feeling the part today. And by Wednesday, 25 million Americans will be under heat advisories that'll last until July. In the South, temperatures will soar into the triple digits, with some areas 25 degrees above normal. The heat has been so extreme in the Midwest that is actually killing cattle. Supposed to hit 100 today in parts of Minnesota. Stranded at the airport. That's what a lot of us were over the weekend. Correspondent Deborah Rodriguez.
A nightmare travel weekend is winding down for American flyers who had to deal with more than 6,900 cancellations between Thursday and last night. These passengers at Charlotte Douglas International were among them.
We're talking 10 hours.
At this point, I don't have any high hopes.
At least 1,400 flights have already been canceled today. Not all are being blamed on the weather. The Delta Pilots Union says it's been telling the airline for months the schedule's just too heavy. Captain Evan Bach.
There's not enough room in there to account for these delays.
He says pilots are working record overtime.
A 15-year-old teenager shot and killed last night at an unlicensed Juneteenth rally in Washington, D.C. Former federal prosecutor Jonathan Fahey says the crime crisis is out of control.
No one is taking this crime issue seriously. Everything is anti-police, pro-criminal. More incidents like this are going to happen as the summer heats up. It's going to be bad, and it's time to change policies and time to take this crime issue seriously.
Three others, including a police officer, were wounded in that shooting. Early this morning, nine were shot. One was killed in a mass shooting in Harlem. One of the 10 House Republicans who voted to impeach Donald Trump says the former president will be hard to stop in 2024.
The voters still like him a lot. He's had a number of decisive wins where he's endorsed candidates that they've won. He certainly entertains a majority of the Republican base.
Michigan Congressman Fred Upton. The percentage of Americans who believe in God has dipped to the lowest number in the past 80 years. According to Gallup, just 81% of Americans believe in the existence of God.
God in our life, God in the public square, is a good thing for all of us. It's a good thing for our community. Better people come from people of faith, I think.
Former Wisconsin Congressman Sean Duffy. Back in the 1960s, 98% of Americans believed in God. Today, it's 81%. Young children between the ages of 6 months to 5 years can start getting the COVID shot starting tomorrow. Former FDA Commissioner Dr. Scott Gottlieb.
It's going to take a little bit more time to get the vaccine into those local settings because it's more difficult to vaccinate a child who is very young. You need people who are specially trained to do that.
Less than a quarter of parents, however, say they'll get their young children the shot. Parts of a popular national park will be reopening this week.
Yellowstone will reopen its Southern Loop at 8 a.m. Wednesday. Extensive flooding in the northern part of the park and surrounding areas wiped out bridges, roads, and homes.
That's reporter Wendy Gillette. It's 25 past the hour, and next at noon, a new summer feature here on Family Life. We're calling it Faith Foundations. And every Monday over the next couple of months, we're going to tackle some of the tough topics that Christians face in their faith walk. Today, Family Life's Brandon Dixon is talking with Mike Sherrod, president of the C.S. Lewis Society.
Well, as part of this new Faith Foundations feature, we are going to take a look at some of the questions that are common for Christians, whether they're new or they've been in the faith for a while. And Mike, I tell you, one of these that I know that at times I've struggled with and I've heard people ask me about is, how do we discern God's will? How would you answer that question?
It's an important question. You're right. It's a common question. It's one we all ask. And with a lot of things, step one is just defining our terms. So whether you're asking it or you're being asked this question by someone else, you can say, what do you mean by that? What do you mean by God's will? Because we use that word to describe several aspects of this concept. For one, there would be what we would call God's sovereign will. that which God will do according to his desires, and nothing can thwart that. Like sending his son Jesus Christ to die on the cross for our sins was a part of God's sovereign will. There's also something that we would call God's moral will, that which he wants his creatures to do, human beings. So morality, that we should not lie and that we should love. And typically, though, when people are asking, when we're thinking about ourselves, we're not really thinking about that. We're not trying to know what is God's sovereign will. Some of it is revealed to us. Some of it, of course, isn't, and we're just awaiting that. The moral will, well, it's in the Bible. And so when we say, how do I discern God's will? I don't think people are asking. I really don't understand what this teaching on lust is about in the Bible. What people are asking is relating to something we might call personal will, like, what does God want me to do with my life? Should I take this job? Should I marry this person? And I think the starting place to thinking through that element of faithfulness, how do I steward my life well? How do I honor God well in all that I do and all of my decisions, is to first reflect upon, am I obeying his moral will? Because I think it's kind of disingenuous to say, God, I want to make a good decision taking this job. But yeah. Let's not focus on the fact that I'm a greedy liar that does not love my neighbor. And yeah, I know that's in your word, but can we just put that aside for a second? Because I don't want to make a bad decision regarding this job. Now, that's kind of an extreme way to look at that, but I do think it's very helpful. And this is one of the ways I apply this to my life. Whenever I'm facing a decision, first thing I reflect upon is my own holiness. Am I pursuing the Lord faithfully and living as I should? Because at the end of the day, whether I'm loving my wife and my children as I should is more important than whether or not I make a good decision on this, that, or the other. There are some things that are of ultimate importance, and it doesn't say that these other things aren't important. But then upon that foundation, I think the Bible calls us to pursue wisdom. It's not as if God is this magic eight ball, if that silly old toy is still a relevant analogy today. It's not like we can just shake him in a sense and he just tells us to go left or go right kind of thing, take this job or not. God invites us to use what we know, to use our resources, to use our community, our friends, our church, to make good decisions. The Bible talks a ton about wisdom. In fact, in Romans chapter 12, it talks about having a renewed mind that we might discern, that we might know what God's will is. So God does not just give it to us on a silver platter, if you will. He invites us to live this life with him, make decisions by pursuing wisdom. And I think one of the best ways to do that is with other people. As it relates to this topic of God's will, I'm sure you've met somebody and probably even done it yourself to some degree. I know I have done it in my past. I'm facing a big decision and someone says, oh, so what are you going to do? And I'll say something like, well, I think it's God's will because I prayed and I have peace. And have you ever had that conversation with somebody where you're then on the other side of this and you go, I don't know what God you're praying to, because that is an obviously bad decision. Mm-hmm. There is no way that can be God's will for your life, because it's awful. It even violates his moral will. And just because you have peace doesn't mean anything. You can have peace for a number of reasons, one of them just being ignorance. Ignorance is bliss. And so I think as it relates to how do I know what God wants me to do with my life, which really is the question, how do I steward well and live in obedience to God, seeking to honor him in all I do? I think a simple game plan for that, if you will, is to pursue holiness, seek a renewed mind through God's word, and to pursue good decision-making in the community of God's people. And last thing on this idea, often we approach the topic of God's will thinking that God's sole role is to keep me from suffering. And a lot of times I want to know what God's will is because I don't want to make a bad mistake in this decision, and then I don't want to just suffer the consequences of that. And that's a really low view of God if that's how we're treating him, and it's not proper. Moreover, in 1 Peter, it talks about that it might be God's will for us to suffer even when we do good. And so that's another part of this thing is, do we trust God enough with our decision-making to seek to honor him in all we do, even if in the course of this, God might allow us to suffer even when we do good, because it relates to his sovereign will and the plan that he's working in this world.
That will preach any day of the week. Mike Sherrod of the C.S. Lewis Society on discerning God's will for your life. The name of the feature, Faith Foundations. It airs Mondays all summer long during the Noon Report. You can also catch it online at familylife.org.
Good afternoon. Here is the Family Life Weather Report. For this afternoon, we'll see high clouds and sun mix. The high 70 to 75 over New York, 75 to 80 over central and eastern Pennsylvania. Tonight, a widely scattered shower or thunderstorm over western New York and western Pennsylvania. Otherwise, it's partly starlit. The low temperature in the low 50s eastern Pennsylvania, low 60s central and western Pennsylvania. Ample sunshine for tomorrow. The high 75 to 80 over New York State, low 80s western and central Pennsylvania. For Family Life, I'm meteorologist Josh Nichols.
And finally from us at noon today, it's not always your fault when you can't remember things. Thank God for that. And a new study by Danish researchers shows why that mental to-do list, well, why it's so challenging.
Here's their example. Walk the dog after work, take your medicine after dinner, and call a friend in the evening. All these intentions are in a race. They compete neurologically to sprint across the finish line in your working memory, which is limited. The researchers' advice? Connect the intentions to specifics. Don't just plan to take your medicine after dinner. Plan to take the yellow pill right after your last bite of dinner. The scientists found such detail helps. So does setting up visual cues and written reminders of your plans and promises. And be gentle with yourself and each other. Researchers estimate the average person forgets between 3 and 10% of what we intend. Greg Gillespie, Family Life News.
Well, it's good to know I'm not alone. Thank you, Greg. That's the world we live in. Monday, the 20th of June. I'm Bob Price. Family Life News.
You've been listening to the Noon Report, heard weekdays on Family Life. Thank you for listening.